Any horse, but for a change of circumstances, can become unwanted. The unwanted are racetrack rejects, excess ranch stock, foals that did not live up to their breeders' expectations. They are aged Amish cart horses, horses with chronic lameness issues, the pony a child outgrew. The U.S. equine industry consistently produces more horses each year than the number of, quote, appropriate homes, leaving thousands of animals with nowhere to go. Award-winning equestrian and journalist Christina Keim has written about this issue in her new book, Unwanted, The Causes and Effects of America's Horse Population Crisis. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Christina Keim to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What got you, obviously you've been in this business for a long time, I'm interested in when you started to notice that there was a real issue here with the unwanted.
Well, I guess I would have to blame social media for that. You know, it certainly has connected us in all kinds of unforeseen ways. And I started to see ads with people trying to find new homes for their horses. And a lot of times they followed a similar theme where maybe we have an older animal or one that for whatever reason the owner just no longer wanted. And they would be trying to find a new place for them on Facebook or on Insta or any of the other social sites. And people would start to make comments about how dangerous it was to post your horse in that way because you just never knew who was going to show up and take that animal. And what I realized was it was really hard to separate, you know, fact from fiction and truth from myth. So I started to go look for resources or a place where I, as a pretty experienced equine person, could get some answers. And I realized there really wasn't a single place to go for those answers. So I started to dive in.
The number that you have in the book is startling, that some 150,000 horses are shipped to slaughterhouses, whether it be Canada or Mexico, each year. And then the number of horses that just are given away or are sold cheap, who are then starved or abused or abandoned, is an even higher number.
Well, I would qualify those numbers a little bit. The larger number that you just cited, that was at the height when we still had slaughterhouses operational in the U.S. So those last buildings closed in 2006. So we knew what was going through the American slaughterhouses because it was under the USDA oversight. When those plants closed, and again, that last one closed in 06, we lost the ability to really effectively track numbers. So at this point, we know numbers are down. We know the work that a lot of these really amazing safety net and rescue organizations has done. We know the education that's gone out there has helped to reduce numbers to some degree. But we I think, are fairly comfortable guesstimating based on what we can glean from export records and such, that we're probably talking about at least 20,000 horses that are still crossing the borders to go to this fate.
And the second aspect of that, of those that are given away and then become abused and abandoned, that's a much harder number to keep track of, I would think.
Absolutely. There's really almost no way to quantify that.
But you know it's a large number, obviously.
Well, and we know based on feedback from some of these rescue organizations where people do sometimes reach out for help. They do contact them and ask to surrender horses. And these groups will take in, you know, as many as they feel qualified to provide care for, but their resources are finite as well, both human and financial.
Let me ask you, obviously I've done many segments on the dog and cat population and shelters and kill shelters and no-kill shelters and so forth. And that issue has been around for a really long time. Are the basics of what causes it, are they similar? And has the equine industry and those activists learned anything from what those who are advocating for cats, dogs, other pets, in keeping as many horses alive and wanted as opposed to unwanted?
So there are absolutely some parallels and some lessons learned. One of the most profound ones, I think, came from the idea that you can foster a horse. You can find foster homes for horses, just as we might find a foster home for a dog. So, you know, sometimes horses have, through whatever set of variables, you know, they haven't received that foundation of training that allows them to be safe around humans. I mean, they're huge and they're powerful, and we need to make sure they understand that we're not a harmful creature to them, and they don't need to be defensive toward us. So, but this idea that we could find foster homes where people would be willing to work with these horses and put some training in and help them to sort of become an equine good citizen instead of the canine good citizen, right? That was a really revolutionary idea. And I think that was something that was very much borrowed from what we've learned in cat dog shelters. There's definitely more work to do. I think, you know, if your family's looking for a new pet, the shelter is almost always the first place you think to stop and find a new family member. In the equine world, there unfortunately is still a perception that if a horse does end up in an equine rescue or a shelter, there's something wrong with him, that the horse is lame or the horse is unwell or untrained. And so it's not necessarily the first place that people will think to go to look for their new horse. And I think that's something advocates are working to change.
Given that I am talking to you a stone's throw away from one of the nation's oldest racetracks, Saratoga Springs, how do you feel about the horse racing industry and the job that they do when it comes to these unwanted horses?
I have to say, I think that the thoroughbred racing industry in particular and their colleagues in the standardbred world, which are the ones with the carriages, you know, I think that they were perhaps a little bit forced into it, but they've really shown that change is possible, because I grew up in upstate New York and I spent a lot of time at Saratoga as a horse loving youth. And in that era, there was a bit of a throwaway attitude. I mean, that really was the reality, that when a thoroughbred racehorse's career was done, you just sent him on to wherever he ended up, and you found a new one and you moved forward. And the American racing fans really said, you know what, we don't like that. We care about what happens to these horses. We want to know that they're going to have a good life after the racetrack. So the industry was kind of forced into this change, and it's been really remarkable. So they call it aftercare or aftercare planning. And basically anyone connected with one of these thoroughbreds now, whether it's the trainer, the owner, the jockeys, the hot walkers on the backside, you know, they're really always keeping a super close eye on these animals' level of fitness and their level of comfort with the job and their attitude toward the job. And when they start to show signs that they're coming to the end of their racing career, these connections are making plans. They're networking with different organizations that will take those horses in and start the process of training them to do a more traditional riding job, for example. And it's really become the norm and the expectation within the thoroughbred racing industry. And is there more work to be done? Always, always do some fall through the cracks, of course. But I think it's a really stunning model of how a shift in attitude can make a really positive change.
Christina Keim is our guest. The name of the book is Unwanted: The Causes and Effects of America's Horse Population Crisis. I was giving some examples in the introduction, but what sector really do you think is the most troublesome and the hardest to come to terms with trying to correct?
You know, I do not feel I can point my finger in any single place. I really think it's a cumulative effect. It's all those types of horses that we cited, and it's a real mix. I think there's a misconception, one of the myths, if you will, is that it's only older horses or horses that have had an injury and cannot be ridden. It's only those kinds of horses that end up without a place to go. And that's just not the case. And I think that that myth is a really important one to dispel, that we know from research and surveys that have been done from our rescue organizations that the number one reason a horse ends up in need of help is because something happened to their owner. So maybe that owner lost their job, they had an unexpected health crisis, sometimes even, you know, an unexpected death, and the family is left with an animal that's expensive that they don't know anything about or how to care for. So we know that the most common reasons that horses end up in trouble have to do with a change in the owner's circumstances. And so when I say, you know, any horse, but for a change of circumstance can become unwanted, I really mean it. It's sometimes people who really, really care about their horses and just find themselves in a situation they can't get out of.
As I mentioned, the subtitle to the book is The Causes and Effects of America's Horse Population Crisis. We've talked about some of the causes. Talk about those effects that we see.
Well, you know, it's hard because when you have a large, long-lived herbivore like the horse, you know, they're a really unique animal because a lot of folks in the U.S. really see them not so much as a livestock species, although that's what they're legally classified as. They see them as something more like a companion animal. And so when you start to face the fact that there are going to still be horses, you know, despite the best efforts of some of these groups that are working to make change, there are going to be some horses we just don't really have a good solution for them. We don't have a good place for them to go. The question of what to do next is a really tough one because, you know, when you see a species as being a little more like a companion animal, sending them to slaughter does not feel like the right or humane or ethical end of life option. But people get really squeamish at the same time, just as they do with the small animal shelters, about the idea of using euthanasia as population control, right? But the reality is these animals require care and they require resources. So we can't let them get to a place where they're not being cared for.
You talk in the book about how we have to be open-minded and informed as we discuss this. Ultimately, we're working for the best interest of the horse.
Right. Absolutely. It's such a value-driven type of subject, and it really does come down to how an individual person or an organization in its mission and ethos, how they see the horse and what they do feel and believe is the right and just way to manage them. So, you know, for an example, there's a bit of conflict, if you will, or disagreement or discord around, you know, maybe an animal who has a chronic condition that is not going to be as desirable for most owners to adopt because the condition requires ongoing care and management. And it's not that the animal is suffering or doesn't have a good quality of life, but they're always going to be managing this condition, right? There's sort of a school of thought that it's better, more humane, safer for that animal in the long run to perhaps euthanize them straight out and free up resources to care for a different horse. And there are other groups who feel like a better option is to give those horses lifetime sanctuary in a paddock somewhere and just allow them to be horses and live out their days. And there's value in both of those perspectives. You know, if the horse is not overtly suffering or unwell, but it creates friction among people who really could be working a little more harmoniously toward a common goal.
I was struck in your introduction, there's a line there that says that you teach compassionate horsemanship. And I'm curious, and I know this may seem overly simplistic, but what is that? And ultimately, how do you teach it?
maybe you teach it, maybe you model it. You know, horsemanship itself is a centuries old tradition. There's a bit of art to it. There's a bit of science to it. And certainly there are folks who have learned an awful lot from the generations of horsemen that have come before us. But I add that passionate piece because in my work with horses and as I teach about horses, I really try to emphasize that the horse gets a say in what's happening as well. So, you know, when you're riding a horse into battle, you don't want to hear the horse's opinion about the subject. You just need them to do what you say. But in our modern world, when we're really using horses as a means of recreation, you know, to get out and enjoy the outdoors, to form a partnership with this being, we as horsemen need to educate ourselves about how horses learn, how horses think, how they perceive information. And if they are struggling to meet our expectations or struggling to respond to what we want them to do, we need to take time and to consider their unique species needs. And so that's where for me the compassionate piece comes in, that we're really considering the horse's needs in the partnership just as much as what we want to do.
In the title of the book is the word crisis, but you do come out of this book. I think most people will come out of this book feeling somewhat hopeful.
That's the goal. That is the goal. I've mentioned already, there are some amazing groups doing boots on the ground work. You know, they're intervening in situations where unfortunately horses have experienced neglect or are unwell. And that's an important component. But just as important are groups that are reconceptualizing who the horse is and what the horse can be for us in modern America. He is not our beast of burden any longer. And certainly there's a large segment of the horse loving world who uses them for recreation, but there's an absolutely growing segment of people who appreciate the horse simply for being a horse and find being in their presence to be tremendously therapeutic without it being therapy, right? So we talk about some amazing groups doing work where they're partnering horses with youth at risk, with incarcerated people, with veterans. And, you know, the healing they experience from interacting with the horses they meet. And it's just a really amazing way to reconceptualize who the horse is and what he means to us.
The name of the book, Unwanted, The Causes and Effects of America's Horse Population Crisis. The book is published by Trafalgar Square Books. Christina Keim, thank you so much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Again, the name of the book is Unwanted. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.